This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, the man who traveled to more places in the past 2 weeks than Carmen Sandiego back in 86, Marcus Vandenberg. What's going on, brother?
Greetings, Big Apple, Nate.
Yes, in New York now. Of course, getting ready for that big TNA show, of course.
Yeah, it's, sure, whatever you say.
We all know, the listeners have been asking and asking questions to me. I don't know why the hell they're asking me, because I was not there, but Marcus, of course, spent the last week up in Beantown at the NABJ conference. Of course, we're going to get into that a little bit more in the weeks to come. But just real quick off top, how did you enjoy the conference and, some quick observations from your time there?
Yeah, the conference was good. This was my, sixth NABJ. Located in Boston, Boston, not exactly known for black people, but we were 2,000 deep, so I'm sure they were thrilled to see us. And I'm sure the hotel staff at the Sheraton was happy with us sitting in the lobby at 2 o'clock in the morning, just kicking it. So I'm sure they were thrilled.
You're saying that's the largest collection of pocket squares that Boston has ever seen?
I think so. It might have been. I'm sure the people in town for Yankees Red Sox who stayed at the hotel were like, "We picked the wrong hotel this weekend, boy."
It must be a gospel convention or something in town.
I know something was going on, but yeah, we took over the place. It was a good time. Highlight. Got a chance to go see Fenway Park. Went to Red Sox Blue Jays on Wednesday with Morgan Campbell, who will be on hopefully next week to give us a better recap. Fenway is always a cool place. I got a chance to go. It was 11 years ago, I believe. I got to see the Dodgers, actually. So that was a cool moment. And besides Dodger Stadium, which I'm biased towards, probably my favorite ballpark that I've been to. So that was good. And the next night, I had to go back to Fenway Park for a private event that Gary Washburn actually put on, who was the chapter president in Boston. So the Red Sox were not in town that night, so Fenway Park was ours for the evening, and they held an event like upstairs in the.
So not only was G. Wash the president of Team Lightskin that week, he was also the mayor of Boston for the NABJ.
He was. G. Wash was the unofficial mayor of the weekend. Had a chance to spend some time at Fenway. Didn't really see much outside of that in terms of the city. Spent a lot of time at the hotel. Ran into some friends of the show. Bomani Jones was there. Mark Spears, of course. We mentioned G. Wash. Monique Jones, who was on last week, was there. Spent a lot of time with her. Trying to think who else has been on the show that was Morgan, I mentioned. So yeah, it was a good chance to catch up with people. And then on Sunday, I departed Boston for New York, where I've been since Sunday. I'm going back to LA on Friday, so just hanging out this week. Needed some time off from work, so just hanging out.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And as Marcus said, we will get into more of the NABJ next week, hopefully with Morgan Campbell. But before we switch gears, I think I speak for all real Kings of Sports fans and listeners in attendance when I ask, was there a fight? Was there an altercation this year at the NABJ? Because that's really what we're here for.
No fights, no ratchetness. there was ratchetness, but none that you would care about, and none that I could say on the show. No, there was no fights. I just, you know, last year's party was, the takeaway was the whole Michael Smith incident. I just the big news
was Smitty there this year.
He was there. I didn't see him at the party, but he lives in Boston, so he might have been home. I did see him at the convention, but I don't know if he was actually at the event itself. But the big takeaway / celebrity sighting at the party this year was Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons was in town for ABJ. Oh. This was his first convention that I know of. And the other, I guess, Simmons sighting that he posted on Instagram was at the convention itself. There's a career fair section, and part of the section, this was a first also this year, was a booth, and at this booth featured Thelma from Good Times, who was charging $40 to get her photo taken.
Wait a minute, okay. I got no problem with Thelma from Good Times, but what was Thelma from Good Times doing at the career booth?
She was trying to advance her career in her pocketbook. By the way, so $40 is, I believe that's the same price Virgil.
Right, yeah, so that's the question, Thelma or Virgil,
both in their 50s, Thelma looking a little better than Virgil, and seemed a little friendlier than Virgil, but Simmons paid the $40, he took the photo, and the photo's on his Instagram page if you want to check it out, but...
I got to hand it to Bill, he knows how to ingratiate himself with black people. He's like, I'm going to take a picture with one of your cultural icons.
I think the caption was like, my favorite moment of 2014. So he loved it. And the other celebrity, well, not celebrities, he's a peer, I guess. But the other unexpected sighting was Jason Whitlock, who made
him. Well.
Whitlock is not an NABJ guy. I haven't seen him at a convention since I've been active in 06, but he, as you know, started a black website that is supposed to be the Black Grantland, and I believe he came out to look for some black writers, so that was a unexpected appearance as well.
Yeah, especially after that Deadspin piece, like, I think he needs all the goodwill he can get right now.
Yeah, and any friends he can get, the more the better.
So you're a black writer, Marcus. Did he talk to you?
No, I did not speak to Whitlock. He, made an appearance on Saturday afternoon, and I was actually headed out. We had five kids from my school, Hofstra, who came up from Long Island to convention, and I took them out Saturday afternoon to eat. So I didn't get a chance to mingle with Whitlock, but Morgan did. I think Morgan can give you his side of the story next week.
Oh, I can't wait for that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the NABJ stories, and hopefully we'll have more of those next week with Morgan Campbell, friend of the program.
By the way, one more tease. There was a guy at NABJ who had his hair in a conch. His hair was like Malcolm X, like straight up, like... He could have been Andre 3000, like, just, yeah. So, I did not get a good picture of this guy.
A journalist, a working journalist.
I don't know if he's working. With that hair, I'm not sure if he's working, but he was a journalist.
He's like that that guy. Who's the guy that just kind of had an overnight cup of coffee of fame during the Heat Spurs finals?
Bobby Ramos.
Yeah, Bobby Ramos.
Yeah, and if you don't know what a conch is, just look up conch, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Bobby Ramos with a conch.
Bottom Line Sports, Bobby Ramos.
Oh, man, yeah, this is going to be good. Like, I wish the NABJ happened more than once a year just so we could have more crazy stories to talk about.
I went once a year is enough. By Saturday, I was drained. I love my people, but... They can wear you out.
Like, this is the longest family reunion ever.
It is.
So let's switch gears from the NABJ and go to the NBA. Let's go to the hardwood where I guess the biggest story of the week, Marcus, and it's certainly not the most pleasant story, is the Paul George injury.
Yeah, it happened Friday night in Vegas during the Team USA scrimmage, and you know, not to name drop, but that party, the incident happened while I was at the sports task force party, and I was actually surrounded by some of the NBA writers who were not in Vegas, Mark Spears, David Aldridge, Jay Adonde, and
you got that stomping with the big dog.
Yeah.
Did you give my card?
Yeah, I passed it on to him.
All right.
I got you. So all of those guys were finding out about this injury via Twitter, like I was, and you know, thanks to stuff like Vine and stuff, we could watch the play right there from the party, and I mean, that was hard to watch, just watching his leg, you know, snap the way it did, and just knowing that, you know, this was something that is going to cost him, you know, a year of his season, and hopefully just 1 year, and hopefully won't impact his career in the future.
It was very reminiscent. I was watching the game on Friday night. I just kind of had it on in the background when I was doing some work for the podcast, and, you know, I just looked up, and it was like everybody was just really quiet, and it, you know, the game had just come to a standstill. And I was like, what's going on here? And then they showed the replay, and you see, you know, George getting kind of tangled up with James Harden and then running into the stanchion at the base of the backboard and, you know, breaking his leg in two places. And it brought back memories of the Kevin Ware injury from the, you know, March Madness tournament last year with Louisville. And it was just like, you saw the immediate reaction from the players. Kyrie Irving, you know, most notably was in tears. You know, Coach K, of course, stopped the game, which was the right call. But everybody was shook, and it's a bad look for Team USA. It's a bad look for the Pacers, and most importantly, it's a bad look for Paul George, who is a player that was finally starting to come into his own, finally starting to realize his potential, and now he's going to be out for at least a season, Marcus.
Yeah, it's a tough blow for Indiana, who without Paul George and without Lance Stephenson, they lost to Charlotte in the offseason, are now down their two best players. You got Roy Hibbert, who disappeared in the playoffs. You can't really trust him. So that just leaves you, you know, with inconsistent Hibbert, David West, George Hill.
Welcome to the George Hill era.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
In Indiana's favorite son.
Ooey pooey dread. George Hill. So, yeah, I mean, and there's that much in terms of free agents. There's Sean Marion, who is deciding, I guess, between Cleveland and Indiana.
Which at this point, I think that decision is a whole lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. Though Indiana has a lot more money to offer him. With the injury, Indiana will have some room under the cap with the disabled player exception. So if Marion wanted more money, Indiana would be the move.
I mean, do you want more money to be on a terrible team, or do you want less money to potentially, you know, play in the finals?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not going to call Indiana terrible. I think this will be a playoff team next year without Paul George and Stevenson. But, you know, it depends on you're making probably $1 million in Cleveland, or you could probably make your probably two or three in Indiana. So, and outside of that, I mean, Chris Douglas Roberts and Francisco Garcia, there's not really a lot of guys who could come in and, you know, really plug that hole. I know they did sign Rodney Stuckey before George got hurt. So he's a guy who could benefit from this injury and move up in the starting lineup. And he's a bit inconsistent as a point guard / shooting guard, but he's a decent option. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting what Frank Vogel does in Indiana. But they really shouldn't count on Paul George this season. They should really just focus on the following year and hopefully see some development out of Roy Hibbert as a result.
Yeah, you're just looking at that roster, Rodney Stuckey, George Hill, Roy Hibbert. Like, is this the Indiana Pacers or the Expendables 4?
Yeah.
Like, this is not a team that engenders confidence from the fan base.
No, but they I will say, I went to two Pacers games this year. They are a loyal fan base. They really know the sport of basketball. So I think either way they will support the Pacers this year, and I don't think they're gonna, turn on them like another fan base that I know locally. So they'll be fine.
Now, are you speaking locally as in LA or locally as in New York, where you currently are
Oh,
located?
good point. I think both might apply.
One last thing on the George injury. We've had a lot of noise come out of this incident, and Mark Cuban has kind of gone on record as stating that he doesn't feel that the Team USA should, employ the NBA players. And you've had other people come out and say that it's a risk. Why are these guys risking their NBA seasons for this? And it's a situation where it's kind of like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, if you're a player. Because we saw guys pull out of Team USA and they got criticized for it. But if you know what I mean, you can't have it both ways if you're a fan base. So where do you come down on this whole discussion of should the NBA guys be on Team USA?
They should. Would I want my guys from my favorite team playing for Team USA? Not really, because what there's no benefit as a Laker fan for Kobe winning a gold medal. That doesn't benefit the Lakers. But I'm not gonna knock the guys if they want to represent their country. I think they should be allowed to. But if they don't, college guys didn't represent the country, and then we have the same issue. We'll have college coaches who are upset that their top guys are running the chance of getting hurt. But all these guys play basketball year round. These guys can get hurt playing summer league, the Drew League. So there's nothing preventing them from getting hurt unless you wrapping them in a bubble in the off season and telling them not to play. So injuries are bound to happen. It was a freak injury. Team USA, international basketball shouldn't be the scapegoat. And I think this issue will sort of blow over once this World Cup competition is over in September.
Yeah, it's not like these guys go into the off season and they don't do anything physical. They play basketball year round. If it's not in the Drew League, it's going to be at Rucker Park. If it's not at Rucker Park, it'll be a pickup game somewhere or a charity event. And there's always the risk of injury. So, I think Paul George, I'm not going to take anything away from the guy. I think it's honorable that he wanted to represent his country, and it's unfortunate for him and the Pacers, and the league as a whole, because I think that with Paul George on that Pacers team, you had the makings of a dogfight in the East. If you got Derrick Rose at somewhere close to full strength in Chicago, if you got LeBron and perhaps Kevin Love in Cleveland, if you got the Pacers with Paul George and those boys, you got Lance Stephenson on the Bobcats, you got my Atlanta Hawks, you got the Miami Heat. The East is very interesting, and I think losing Paul George, kind of it doesn't make it less competitive, but I do think it takes a little bit of the edge off of the season.
Yeah, especially if this Kevin Love deal happens on, I guess, August 24th, which would send, I've heard a few different scenarios, but a combination of guys, including Kevin Love, obviously, Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, Thaddeus Young. There's a few, moving parts in this, but if Love ends up in Cleveland, in addition to a guy like a Sean Marion, I think we're looking at a definitive favorite out of the East in Cleveland, and I think everyone else will be playing for 2-8 in the Eastern Conference.
I agree, and let's go on to Cleveland and go to LeBron James's big homecoming celebration they've got planned for Friday. And Cleveland is the talk of the NBA. I guess wherever the king goes, so goes the conversation. And you mentioned the impending Kevin Love deal, which I think is going to happen on August 24th. I think Golden State had a shot, but they were unwilling to give up Klay Thompson. And Cleveland seems more than willing to give up Wiggins and whatever package it's going to take to get Kevin Love in a Cavs uniform.
It is so much so that LeBron hasn't talked to Andrew Wiggins, which is kind of awkward.
Awkward was that interview was awkward with Andrew Wiggins from this past week when they were basically talking to him and they didn't ask him anything about, how does it feel to be drafted? What do you plan to do in the league? Everything was, have you talked to LeBron? Do you want to play in Minnesota? What do you think about being traded? And I'm just imagining, like, inside Kevin Love's head, he's going back to that old Temptation song. It's like, I know you want to trade me, but I refuse to let you go. But I think this is a very good move if I'm a Cleveland Cavalier fan. And I think this is the rare trade that could be a win-win for both organizations with Wiggins going to Minnesota.
it'll allow Wiggins to develop more. I think if he was playing with LeBron, he would have been sort of the back burner option in terms of trying to, you know, really focus on his game. And Minnesota will allow him to get playing time in that team. It sounds like he won't be done with Anthony Bennett. I don't think Minnesota is interested in taking Bennett on. But Bennett was someone who impressed me at Summer League this year. And if he ends up in Philadelphia, I think he's another guy who could benefit from that team, who is trying to tank once again, it seems like, this season. So he will get plenty of time to play. But, you know, if you plug in Wiggins with Ricky Rubio, who still needs to learn how to shoot, unfortunately. They are a young team. Kevin Martin is still around. Petrovic is still around. So, I don't see them making the playoffs, but I do see Wiggins having a chance to shine and get some playing time.
Yeah, and I think for the, you know, there was the discussion for the past month or so, you know, ever since LeBron decided to go home, you know, it's like, will the Cavaliers trade Wiggins? Would they trade their first pick? Why would they trade Wiggins? To me, it's always been a no-brainer, Marcus. I know you know, talk to NBA experts at Yahoo all the time. Maybe you got a different perspective. But to me, it didn't make any sense for Cleveland not to trade Wiggins. I mean, he could be the greatest player in the history of basketball, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, he could be a LeBron 2.0, but it's going to take at least 5 years for him to mature, for him to get his basketball skills going. The kid's 19 years old. I'd rather have 25-year-old Kevin Love for the prime years of his career side by side with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and with a guy like Kevin Love, you don't find guys who average 26 and 12 and 4.5 assists that often. So, you know, when you're talking about Wiggins, who might have all the potential in the world, we still don't know what he can do in the NBA. And the only way this won't be a good deal is if they pull off this trade and they don't re-sign Kevin Love. They need to make sure they don't let him walk. And I'm assuming at some point, either as part of this deal or shortly thereafter, he'll get a max deal from Cleveland, probably in the offseason when they have some more cap space. But assuming Love doesn't walk away, then this is going to be a great move for both teams. And I guess all three teams, if Philly's involved.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, I don't know if folks have noticed, but you know, I have a keen eye when it comes to the world of sports. And I don't know if you've noticed it, Marcus, but the last few times we've seen LeBron James, whether it's on TV or an interview or TMZ's captured him, does he look a little leaner to you, man?
He does. That was like the big story, I guess, on Tuesday, that he cut out carbs from his diet and he's on that CC Sabathia weight loss plan, looking like Al Sharpton out there.
Yeah, and so that tells me, A, that they're sure they're getting Kevin Love, and B, LeBron is through playing in the post, at least to the extent he played in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need to. He can go back to being a true small forward and can let Kevin Love and Varishow and Tristan Thompson do what they need to do inside.
If I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm really excited right now because I think they have the potential, you know, to be a really exciting team. They just need depth, and I think they're on the way to doing that with Sean Marion, as we mentioned earlier. You know, if your choices are Indiana or Cleveland, sure, Indiana can offer you more money, but I think just in terms of opportunity of winning, and also it'd probably be a lot more fun to play in Cleveland with those guys.
Yeah, he's he'd be less playing time, but he does have a championship ring, so it really just – it'd be tough. I mean, at this point in his career, I would think you would want to get as much money as you can and just set yourself up for the future. But at the same time, if you're going to play for a team that's 41-41 compared to a team that can make the finals, you know, it's a tough choice.
And it's also, you know, there's contract money, but then there's also off-the-court money, endorsement money. Like, being a part of this new group that LeBron has brought together, there may be benefits, you know, to that off the court that aren't necessarily going to be in that contract.
Nah, Sean Marion ain't getting broke. No, he don't do what the local Cleveland car dealership. Yeah, he'll
Akron needs cars too. Charles Ramsey can't do all the commercials.
Yeah, he'll get a free ride from Cleveland Ford out of this deal.
Oh, that's. I wish we would have seen Charles Ramsey do like a bunch of local commercials.
I forgot about that guy.
That would have been great. Yeah, people, so how quickly we have forgotten about the true hero of Cleveland. Like, you can see, you know, hi, I'm Charles Ramsey. Cleveland, IKEA, and Chevrolet, They have the best deals. It's almost a dead giveaway.
Dead giveaway.
Had some pretty white little white girls run up to him. I need to call Mr. Ramsey. Dead giveaway.
We need a follow up on what happened to him and the other guy with the voice. The mac and cheese guy.
The golden voice. Yeah.
Yeah. I know he had some personal issues. He was dealing with some alcohol. But we need an update on these celebrities.
I know Charles Ramsey is Charles Ramsey. He was on Dan Le Batard a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
And apparently he's got a book coming out about the whole incident.
Of course.
And he's trademarked dead giveaway, of course. But I think he's staying out of trouble. Ted Williams. That was the guy with the golden voice. And apparently he has started a Ted Williams nonprofit organization for homeless shelters.
Oh, that's good.
But yeah, he did have a lot of problems, but I know he got broke off with that Kraft mac and cheese commercial.
He did.
Oh, he's got a film coming out about his life called Houseless.
Good for him.
Yeah. That was like the big feel-good story, but then it was like as quickly as he rose to fame, everybody wanted to tear him back down.
That's the American way.
Yeah, it's very American.
Build you up, tear you right down. He was on Dr. Phil spilling his guts about his alcohol problems, and I just said, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, but getting back to Sean Marion, if I'm Sean Marion, I think I'd do that. I think I'd go to Cleveland because winning is more fun than losing. I mean, money is great, but there's something about being a winner, especially if you win in Cleveland. That might secure you like a job within the organization. Like there's other perks that may come from that.
Yeah, but when did he win? He won. Was he part of that Miami team and won or Dallas or both? So I know he had stints in. Let's see, Sean Marion.
I believe he won in Dallas, but when he came to Miami, he didn't win one.
So he wasn't part of that 06 team with Wade and
All right, here we go.
No, he was in Phoenix then.
Yeah, he went to the Heat in 2008.
So Dallas, he got the ring. Okay.
Yeah, got the ring in Dallas.
All right.
So, yeah, I think being a part of that group that brings a ring to Cleveland, like that's like legendary, like Boston stuff. You know what I mean? Like you can build a career off of that for years. Being like the sixth or eighth man on the team that brought one of the first championships to Cleveland in decades.
Yeah.
Coming to the Cleveland Armory, Sean Marion and Bernadette Stans.
Oh, boy.
$40 a picture.
Who charges more?
I think Sean would charge more, but I'd probably pay more for Thelma.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would be a dynamite experience.
That's what they need. They need a JJ there.
Man, Jimmy Walker, I will tell you this, Marcus, before we get to our last story of the day. Jimmy Walker is really underrated as an actor. Because I watched some of those Good Times episodes, man, and there was the one where, I don't know if you remember, the one where JJ got caught up with the bad boys running numbers for him.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out they were dope dealers. And the cops came in and busted the place, and JJ was hiding, and he was scared, and he called his mom. He's like, Mom, I'm ready to come home. Then there was the one where his buddy got hooked on drugs because he broke up with his girlfriend, and JJ had to keep him awake so he wouldn't go into a coma. You got a lot of stuff to live for, man. Don't die, Jimmy. Stay awake, Jimmy.
It's really a depressing show if you think about it.
Yeah, there were really very few good times on that particular television program. Like, don't even get me started on Penny getting burned with the hot iron.
That, the classic damn.
Yes.
Man, this is...
They had a literal cliffhanger where they had a deaf boy backing into an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
A literal, that was good times.
Not so good times, man. No. Jeez.
No. And the one time where they were on the precipice of having good times, Thelma met a football player. He broke his leg at the wedding.
I don't remember that one.
Like she met Keith, and Keith was a star football player. He's gonna play for the Miami Dolphins, and then he ended up breaking his leg at the wedding, becoming an alcoholic, and he smacked her around in one episode. Oh. Yeah, man. Not so good times indeed. But there were good times in San Antonio, Marcus, and that is where we're going to start our final story of the program this week. And we normally don't talk assistant coach news on this program, but we will make an exception for this case in particular. And it seems like the Church of Popovic has gained a new disciple.
Yes, the latest Popovich disciple now in the coaching tree will be Becky Hammon, current WNBA player who retired at the end of the season and joined the Spurs coaching staff, and she will become the first female full-time assistant coach in the NBA, which is great. And it's going to be hard not to root for San Antonio now just based on the story alone and what Popovich is doing to allow Becky Hammon this opportunity to coach in the NBA. I think this is one of the great stories of 2014, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. And I think she's picking the right team. I think that team, you know, between guys like Duncan and Ginobili and Parker, I mean, those guys aren't going to be the guys who are going to give her issues. And I'm sure they signed off on this and gave Popovich, you know, their blessing. And I'm curious to see what the next step is. Like, how far can Becky Hammon go up the NBA coaching ladder tree?
Yeah, a really cool story. As you mentioned, she's the first full-time female assistant coach. I believe John Lucas had hired an assistant coach, but she wasn't full-time back in Cleveland, I believe.
Yeah, she didn't travel. She was part of the organization, but I don't even think she was on the bench during home games. So she was there in theory, but she wasn't. Her presence wasn't felt.
But as you mentioned, if you're going to make this move, if you're Becky Hammon, you couldn't have asked for a better situation.
Yeah, this is the perfect.
You got a locker room that is respectful, and they're mature. They've got a lot of veteran leadership, championship atmosphere. You've got, you know, Pop and R.C. Buford, and just a great organization. And, you know, she's familiar with the organization too, playing with the San Antonio, what is it, the Silver Spurs or the Stars?
Yeah, and she's friends with Duncan and Parker, so that they know each other going back from when she made it to the Stars in 2007. So there's history there between the two of them. So I think this is a great situation, and hopefully just the beginning, just the first of many women making a transition from women's basketball into coaching men.
Now, the big question, Marcus, obviously the next question that comes to mind is, what's her ceiling? Because making that transition from assistant coach to head coach is a big opportunity, and it's not an easy one, even if you're a male, even if you've played in the NBA. But as we've seen with Greg Popovich's assistants, they tend to have a higher success rate than most. Do you see Becky Hammon advancing past this current level?
No, I don't think we're at the point where we're going to see a female head coach in the NBA. I think we have a better chance of seeing a female general manager in the front office than a coach at this point. And I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we never see a female head coach. I just think there's a lot of dynamics that are no fault of anyone in the NBA or any man or woman that would be hard for a woman to deal with, let alone the whole respect factor that would have to be an issue, I'm sure, with some men who would probably scoff and look down at a woman coaching them full time. But no, I don't think this will lead to that big milestone where we have a woman coaching NBA players. Could I see a woman coaching college basketball men? I think that's more of a scenario that you could see. But in terms of NBA players, no.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like I said, just making the leap from assistant to head coach is hard enough. I mean, look at Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
This is a guy that hadn't even gotten a shot, and he's paid his dues. And he hadn't gotten an opportunity yet. I think that this is a excellent place for her to learn. I think that maybe – I don't know if – I'm trying to think. Is being the head coach of a WNBA team, is that – equivocal to being an assistant coach on an NBA team? Because I think, you know, in terms of power, that's probably as high as she can get.
I think she would have, I mean, she'd have more power coaching WNBA, but in terms of responsibility and experience and knowledge, I think she would benefit more from soaking in an NBA bench, and especially those guys, Hall of Famers from Popovich on down. She would take on a lot more working as an assistant than working as a head coach.
And I think in a way, you know, everybody's come out in the past 24 hours and said, you know, she's always had this great mind to be a coach, and she has all the tools to make that next step. But I think something that limits her is she was never a transcendent player. She's always been a very good player, one of the hallmarks of the league in the WNBA, but she was never a Cheryl Miller. You know what I mean? She was never a Nancy Lieberman-Klein who coached in the D-League. You know, she was never the kind of that transcendent player who could just put her rings on the table, so to speak, and say, you're going to listen to me because not only was I a great women's basketball player, but I'm probably better than 90% of this roster right now.
Yeah. She was trying to think of a good NBA comparison to what Becky Hammon is in terms of career.
It's probably going to be a white guy.
See, I wasn't even going to go there.
Somebody with a high motor, great basketball IQ, good outside jump shot from the good mid-range game.
See, stereotyping. I'm going to say, I'm trying to think of the point guard who's had like a long, pretty consistent career. That's a good question. We'll get back to that one. But yeah, she can ball. She's had seasons where she's averaged nearly 20 points in WNBA, which is impressive. And she's been around since 1999, so she's got a long 15-year career. And this is it. This is her final year with San Antonio, and once she's done with this season, she'll make that transition over. So I'm curious to see what that first game is like in terms of the reaction she gets from that home crowd in San Antonio.
Yeah, I think they'll be nothing but respectful. I mean,
The
Spurs fans, much like the organization, is nothing but classy. In terms of a player comparison, I'm going to go ahead and be that guy and compare her to a white NBA player.
Mark Price?
I was going to say she's kind of Mark Price, but I was going to say she's a better version of Kirk Heinrich.
Oh, way better, yeah.
She's like Kirk Heinrich if he had maintained his Bulls years, you know, into the latter part of his career.
Yeah.
You know, when he was averaging, you know, 15, 16 points and 7 assists, something like that, you know, until he began his decline. She was dependable. She was gritty. She, again, these are the cliches.
These total terms.
She's a gym rat. Uh-huh. You just want to have her on your roster. But, yeah, I think that this is a really cool thing. But at the end of the day, I don't know if it leads to anything else because like we saw when the female refs came in, you know, that didn't really bring about this great revolution in female officials.
No, I mean, Violet Palmer, who recently, I think came out last week, just gay. It's pretty much been just her. I mean, she's been respected. There's been no gripes or issues.
The thing about Violet, like she's respected and the players, you know, seem to like her and seem to, you know, respect her as an official, but she's never, to my knowledge, she's never been in, you know, a big time spot in terms of, you know, officiating final series and things of that nature.
No, she hasn't been.
So, I mean, I think you can make a living, as we see with Violet. I think, you know, if Becky Hammon chooses to be a lifer as an assistant coach, I think she could do very well at that. But in terms of being a head coach or ascending to that type of power within an NBA organization, I think that there's going to be a ceiling. I'm not sure if it's the glass ceiling. Of course, her gender is going to play a part in it. But also, I think that, you know, just not having experience playing in that league or being around those locker rooms her whole life, I think that plays into it a bit.
Yeah, and she'll learn as she goes, and I hope she gets the opportunity to really blossom, and it's not just like a one time, like a 1 year deal or anything like that. So, good story to follow this season.
Yeah, like the only person I could see like hiring a female head coach really is like Cubes, because Cubes would do that.
Yeah, he'll do anything.
He's like, hey, I'm hiring the first biracial lesbian female coach.
Well, he was the one who actually talked about Brittany Griner drafting her. So.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. How quickly we forget about that?
I know, because that was just sort of hot air from him, and draft time came around, and you didn't hear anything about it.
Yeah. I don't see you trading any supplemental draft picks to get Brittany.
Yeah, nope.
So, yeah, good for Becky Hammon, who still, to this day, I don't know if she still has the sandwich, but I remember when she played for the Liberty, she had a sandwich at a Carnegie Deli, which is, like, one of my favorite names of a sandwich of all time. It was the Becky Ham and Egg Sandwich.
Oh, that's a great name.
Yeah. And it looked like a pretty good sandwich. I've never been to the Carnegie Deli. Have you?
Yeah, it's a lot of food. It's one sandwich is three meals.
Yeah. Next time I'm in New York, I'm going to have to stop by there and get the Vanderburg. which is all light meat chicken. On a honey wheat bun with avocados because he's from the West Coast.
No, I'm not an avocado person.
Like, they just make up the most stereotypical
California sandwich. Yeah,
he's a light skinned black guy from California.
Yeah,
but we mentioned you are a world traveler, and so, you know, I think this is a good place to end this week's episode. It's going to be a bit of an abbreviated adventure this week, but hey, that's just going to leave you wanting more.
Yeah, it's I didn't pack Mr. Microphone with me, so doing this show this week via cell phone, via Skype, so shorter show this week, but I mean, there wasn't a whole lot going on.
Besides, if Morgan comes on next week, I'm sure we'll make up for it.
Oh, yeah, we'll make up for it. It's Morgan to talk. But, you know, we won't dive into any of the wrestling stuff that's going on. But was there anything that stood out in the wrestling world real quick that you wanted to briefly mention? Or I know TNA's doing their tapings. And if I did the math right, I believe that following Thursday's taping, so it'll be taped through the end of September, which would be...
Yeah, it should lead them right
at the end of their TV deal.
Yeah, right up until the end of the Spike TV deal. I guess the only other news from that is, you know, I guess Court Bauer and John Pollock were talking with, it wasn't them at all. It was Cheap Heat with Rosenberg and the other guy. And they talked.
David Schmader.
Yeah, and they talked to a guy that worked with Spike with TNA, and he's like, you know, there's a possibility. If they're in negotiations with someone, say in September, and they don't have a deal yet, that Spike would offer them some grace period in terms of, you know, we'll keep the show on for X amount of weeks so you can get that nailed down. But, you know, other than that, not a lot of good news coming out for TNA. Not a lot of good news coming out for the WWE with those network numbers.
Oh, yes. I wanted to touch on that briefly. Wow. Huh. I didn't see that one coming. I still think the product is pretty solid. It's just a matter of me how often I use it. I just don't have a lot of time to watch it. But when I do watch it, I don't have any issues in terms of buffering or anything like that. And in terms of the pay-per-views, it's still $10 a month to get the pay-per-views. That's give me that all week, all day. So I was surprised at how many cancellations, and the number isn't growing, and that is not a good sign for the company. And after watching the last 40 minutes of Raw Monday, I can only imagine if you watched all 3 hours and had to sit through all that shameless shilling that they were doing.
I was
going to
say, if you thought the last 40 minutes was bad, how about the first 30?
Man, that just turned me off. And I hope it turned other people off too, to the point where this is not the time to get cute. You know, I got an email last week that said, you know, your renewal period is coming up, because I signed up to day one. So I believe it's after SummerSlam is the 6 month mark, and you know, if I'm a fan having to watch that on Raw, I would, you know, be more likely to tune it off and just say, hey, you know, fuck it. Like, you guys are going to make the joke out of the network and trying to pound it over our heads. I'm just going to cancel it and pick it up before WrestleMania. So they had a trail for you about trying to promote this thing. It's a great product. It's just not taking off, and you know, they can hope that once they start rolling out WCW Nitro, that they can attract the WCW fan to jump on board. But In the meantime, I don't know what exactly they can do to sort of get the number up.
Yeah, I think the problem with the network, and I had the free preview for a week, is that you're right. It is a good service. It's just not a necessity right now.
Yeah.
And I think that, they were counting on these huge numbers because wrestling fans were going to say, I absolutely have to have this product. And the week that I had it, like I said, I enjoyed it Sunday and Monday, but then I didn't think about it again until, that weekend when the preview was running out. And it's like, if the TV product is not hot enough, I don't think right now to warrant, oh, wow, something just happened on Raw. I got to go on the network and see the fallout from this. There's no incentive right now. I think it's a good product. Maybe it came along a little bit too early in terms of the technology hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people still, they're skeptical about, the streams and skeptical about, I have to get the Chromecast or, some other device to get this on my TV because I'm not comfortable watching it on my laptop or on my phone or something like that. I think the model that they're going to use for the network in Canada would have probably been a better thing to go with, at least for the short term.
Yeah.
Instead of going all in with your pay-per-views right now. Because not only is the network not doing well, but you've killed your pay-per-view business.
Yeah. And that was the issue with the cable companies. The cable companies weren't willing to pay whatever the premium rate was for the network itself. So, I mean, they tried and failed on that. So, maybe they should start trying to package the network with a Chromecast or Apple TV. So it's a lot easier for people to, hey, if you sign up for the network, we'll, cut the price on a Chromecast for you. So it's easier for you to watch on your television. Or I think that's the part they need to explain more, is like how you can watch this on your TV.
And
they haven't, they did a good job during the press event. Earlier in the year, they handed out, for the media, they handed out Chromecast and Apple TVs. So they were trying to push the point that, you don't need this device to watch on your home television. But they haven't done that with the general audience yet. So maybe that's something they should look into.
That's a good idea, because right now, I think the easiest application that I've seen of the network is, through your video game console, whether it's the Xbox or the PlayStation,
yeah.
Because it's right there and it's connected and you can go straight from your game to watching the network and it's on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I think fans would be more accessible to something like that or having it bundled with one of those other applications because, that I think they underestimated people's willingness to, jump into this new frontier.
Yeah, and I did too. I thought most people would be more savvy and would, pick up on Apple TV or just their PS4 or PS3 and looked at it that way. But the numbers are not good, but it didn't really kill the stock number because their losses was actually under what they were expected to lose. So they didn't take a beating there, but it's not good. I hope the company sticks with it. I hope they don't turn this into the XFL and they bail early because I think this is the future. They're just a little bit too early in what they're doing.
Yeah, and as Michael Smith always reminds us, numbers never lie.
Yeah.
And on that note, one more thing before we get out of here. I got a number for you, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is great radio right here. Make my own sound effects. The numbers say, should Herman Cain be pissed off at Triple H? The numbers say yes, because 999 was my gimmick first. But yeah, so you didn't see that first segment at all?
No, I missed.
Oh man,
I didn't watch until the first segment. I really remember is JBL holding up the 999 sign, and I was like, "What is this?" And that was enough for me.
Yeah, he actually got to the point where he had hammered this point so much that the crowd started chanting 999 along with him.
Oh, that's impressive, Austin. way to follow along, sheep.
So, yeah. If you want to hear more about Raw, you can check out the review of Raw from my good friends John Pollock and Wei Ting over at the Fight Network. I'll be on Review and Impact again this week talking about the big night in TNA, where it happens, Marcus.
Oh, yeah. We'll save that discussion next week because I do want to discuss the Bully Ray, Ditzy Carter, Table, Angle, and why they probably shouldn't be hyping this thing up the way they are after the Ray Rice incident. I know it's wrestling, it's fate, but The whole woman on man violence.
Yeah.
Not the best timing.
But yeah, not that TNA had had anything to do with the timing, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that next week because I don't feel like getting an angry tweet from Michelle Beadle.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I don't want to get suspended from my own show. Then again, if I got suspended from this show for a week, nothing would change. Because we only do one show a week.
That's true.
So go ahead, suspend me. But before we get out of here, Marcus, let the people know where they can follow you, check out your work and your opinions, and give you some travel tips as you make your way back to the West Coast.
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at MarcoWill, MarcoWill.
You can follow me on Twitter at N8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check us out on Twitter as well at CosPod, KOS_POD. If you want to leave feedback for the show, we've gotten a lot of great feedback. Go to the Facebook page and join in the conversation, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. We've got some really cool feedback from you listeners. A really great letter. I don't remember the gentleman's name.
Let's see if I can find it real quick. Hold on.
Look that up right quick. But
he went by the name of Luke Gallows.
Luke Gallows.
I'm gonna assume it's not Luke Gallows.
If that is your real name, but yeah, he wrote a really good letter about the show, and we appreciate that. Also got some feedback from a friend of the program, Hat Club Andy, who is the biggest Cleveland fan, not named Charles Ramsey. He left some thoughts on LeBron James. I may post that if I get some time this weekend after the LeBron homecoming celebration. So, join in on the conversation. Leave us feedback at facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Also, thekingsofsport@gmail.com. So that's going to do it for another week of the world's most dangerous sports show. Good stuff this week, Marcus. We weren't around for a long time, but we had a good time.
Yeah, a little shorter show, but we'll make up for it. I'll be back back home next week, so we'll make up for it.
Yes, and then we'll get into hopefully some NABJ shenanigans with one brother Morgan Campbell.
Yes.
All right. So for the Road Warrior Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, fat sacks. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.